The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
This program contains explicit content and subject matter which may be unsuitable for some listeners. Discretion is advised.
Sex Out Loud is brought to you by The Smitten Kitten, non-toxic quality sex toys and supplies. Visit smittenkittenonline.com.
Smart. Sexy. Kinky. Fun.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud with your host, sex educator, author, and filmmaker, Tristan Taramino. It's sex-positive radio like you've never heard before. Tristan talks about sexuality from every angle with leading authors, experts, artists, and icons. From sex education and sexual politics to BDSM and non-monogamy, nothing is off limits. So get ready to open your mind and expand your horizons. This is Sex Out Loud. And now here's your host, Tristan Taramino.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud. I hope you are all recovering from Christmas, if you, in fact, celebrate Christmas. I am at the home office up here, buried under 11 inches of snow. So I've been kind of hibernating since the holiday and will be half hibernating, half working all through the new year. This is our final show of 2012, and we are live. So that means we're taking your calls at 866-472-5788. 866-472-5788. You can also post questions on our Twitter feed at Sex Out Loud Radio or on Facebook.com/AskTristan. I've got some really exciting news that I am breaking to my Sex Out Loud audience first. That's right. I haven't told anyone on Facebook. I haven't told anyone on Twitter. That means no one knows, world. And that is that the very first audiobook that I co-produced and narrated is now available on audible.com. I did the audio version of one of my erotica books, which is called Sometimes She Lets Me, Best Butch Femme Erotica. And so this is lesbian and queer erotica. It's published by Cleus Press. It won an award. It won the Lambda Literary Award. And I have several erotica books that are up there already for sale as audiobooks, but this is the first one that I actually co-produced and narrated. So if you want to hear me talk dirty to you and tell you nasty little tales, if you want to listen to something on public transportation and no one will know that you're listening to my filthy, filthy mouth, go to audible.com and get my book. Just search for my name or search for Sometimes She Lets Me. We're also going to put a link on the Twitter feed tonight, and there'll be a link on sexoutloudradio.com. So that's super exciting news. And speaking of erotica, it's interesting. I have kind of a segue into tonight's topic. And that is that several years ago, I asked someone pretty well known, to read one of my erotica collections and possibly give me a blurb. This is a thing that authors do. We ask our friends and our colleagues and sometimes people we don't even know to give us promotional blurbs to put on the back of the book. And I sent my book to someone and I didn't hear back from this person who I didn't know very well. And so I sent her a little reminder and said, hey, you think you might be able to blurb my book? And she sent me back this very heartfelt letter, which said essentially, you know, I don't have a sexual relationship with my partner anymore. We are committed to each other. We are still married, but sex is not a part of our relationship. And so it was really hard for me to read this book and then think about what I might say about it because I don't feel like I'm in a sexual space at all. And actually, I would feel almost like a fraud if I blurbed your erotica book. Well, the first thing that struck me about this email was how brave and just brutally honest this person was with me, someone I don't really know that well, who I consider more like a colleague. But then it also occurred to me, I felt bad after reading this email because I get so many letters from people who are feeling shame and guilt and anxiety and feeling just generally bad about their sexual desires, their sexual practices, their fantasies, what they want to do, what turns them on, what gets them off. And this person was writing saying, I feel really bad because I'm not sexual, which is different. But yet it's connected. It's part of the same story about the assumptions that we make in our culture around sexuality and the standards we set, which don't necessarily reflect our real lives and what's actually going on for people. And that's why I am so excited about tonight's show, which may sound funny coming from me, but I really am excited about this because I think this is one of the really cutting edge movements that's happening within sexuality right now, and that is the asexual movement. My guest today is David J., who came out as asexual to his parents and friends during high school. In 2001, as a freshman at Wesleyan University, he founded the Asexual Visibility and Education Network and asexuality.org, which has become the world's largest organization of people who identify as asexual. He has helped grow the asexual community from a dispersed group of individuals to an international movement with over 70,000 members. His work has been highlighted in the New York Times, Salon, on 2020, and The View, among other places. He's also the subject of a feature-length documentary called Asexual, which is available on Netflix Instant, and I highly recommend you go watch it. He regularly speaks on asexuality and works to promote open, honest dialogue about the asexual community. Welcome to Sex Out Loud, David.
Thanks so much for having me on the air. And it's great to meet you. As I was saying before the show, I'm a huge fan of your work and everything that you're doing. And kind of ever since I saw you speak, we're back at Wesleyan. So it's great to be on the air with you.
Well, you're an alum of Wesleyan. I'm an alum of Wesleyan. So we have a special connection, even though I don't remember meeting you, which was horrible. But I meet a lot of people. I meet a lot of people.
Exactly.
David. I guess let's start by defining some basic terms. What does asexual mean?
An asexual is someone who doesn't experience sexual attraction. So most people, whether they're kind of walking down the street and looking at people or whether they're in really close relationships with people, feel a desire to make sexuality a part of how they connect with other people. And as asexual people, we don't have that intrinsic desire. But otherwise, we have everything else. So we still have the same desire to form intimate emotional relationships with people. Most of us still have bodies that can experience sexual arousal and even sexual pleasure. We just don't have the same intrinsic draw towards that when we're connecting with people.
Okay, so let's start with you, because one of the things I think that the reason that you have really brought this movement to light is because you've been so honest about your own life and your own sort of journey with asexuality. And so tell me a little bit about how you came to identify as asexual.
So I was probably about 13 or 14 when I started using that word. And I remember looking at the world around me. This is kind of middle school, late middle school, early high school, looking at the world around me and seeing this expectation that everyone needed to be sexual in order to be happy. And I grew up in St. Louis, Missouri, and I was fortunate. I was at a fairly progressive high school where there were bi kids who were out and there were gay kids who were out. But there was still the sense that you needed sex to be happy. And that was really scary because I couldn't relate to that. I couldn't relate to what all my friends were going through when they were kind of struggling to understand their sexuality. And I assumed that I was broken. I assumed that there was something wrong with me. And I first started using the word asexual really to try to understand what was going on, why I wasn't feeling this thing that everyone else expects me to feel. And it was only after struggling with it for several years that I really came around and said, you know, I don't think this is a problem. I think that I can still form relationships with people the way I want. I still think I can still live a really happy life, and sexuality just doesn't have to be a part of it.
And when you started feeling these first feelings, did you talk about it with anyone? Did you tell your friends? Did you, like, go looking on the internet? I mean, where did you turn when you first started feeling like, wait, something might be different about me?
I, like a lot of kids, I think the first thing I did was look on the internet. And at that point, there wasn't an asexual community. So if you went looking on the internet, you would find just like stuff on algae and amoebas and, you know, biologically asexual organisms. There was nothing on other asexual people, which was even scarier. I didn't tell my parents. I was terrified to tell my parents, but I told my friends, and I would kind of have like come out after this whole process of getting to know someone with people and really just kind of go back and forth from trying to understand what they were feeling when they talked about sexuality. Because it was like a foreign language. And I felt like I needed to understand this thing in order to understand the world around me, but I didn't have an internal barometer to understand it.
And what is the difference between celibacy and asexuality?
So a celibate person is generally someone who experiences sexual attraction and chooses not to act on it. It's a choice, and it's about how you behave, not about how you feel internally. Asexuality is the opposite. An asexual person doesn't experience sexual attraction and may or may not choose to engage in sexual activity. It's about how you feel internally, not about how you behave. And it's generally not a choice. It's a reflection of how you are.
And in fact, you consider it an orientation. Do you want to talk about why that is?
Yeah, it's like a sexual orientation in that most asexual people kind of, it's a thing that we come to discover about ourselves. It's like all sexual orientation, kind of stable and kind of fluid. I'll say that kind of more deeply than orientation, it's an identity, right? It's a word that people use to figure themselves out. The concept that we come back to in the asexual community again and again and again is that if the word asexual makes sense to figure yourself out, then you should use it. And if it doesn't make sense to understand yourself and describe yourself to others, then you should stop using it. And if it makes sense for a while, then use it. And then stops making sense, it's perfectly okay to use it when it makes sense and then put it down when it doesn't. And I don't get too deeply into kind of defining what asexuality is and isn't, but I think at the end of the day, the reason it exists is so people have that tool to help them understand themselves, and really everyone needs to define it on their own terms if they find it useful.
Well, and I think this makes sense because one of the things that becomes clear in some of the things that I've read about you and some of your interviews is you don't want to create this prescriptive identity for anyone. Because in fact, I think that there already exists a prescriptive identity around sexuality. Just being a sexual person is an assumption. And so it feels clear to me that you don't want to define it too concretely to therefore then alienate people who may actually find some sense of comfort within this identity category or community.
Exactly. I mean, if you look at the asexual community, it's this really diverse group of individuals. And all of us have had this experience of growing up in a society that kind of tells you that if you're not sexual enough, then something's deeply wrong with you. And we've all kind of rejected that idea and said, you know what? We feel like we don't need sex to be happy. We feel like we can explore human connection on our own terms. We can explore our lives on our own terms. And it doesn't have to be about sex. And we'll take that, and then we'll kind of run with it. And we'll often run in very different directions and just kind of come together online and share our stories and compare notes. But it's that core idea of, I think our shared experience is one of stepping away from the assumption that everyone needs sex to be happy, and then beyond that, we've got a really wide range of different experiences.
Well, I want to talk more about this growing asexual community and who is a part of it and what it means. But we've got to take a break and hear from some of our wonderful sponsors who make this show possible. So stay tuned. Give me your comments and questions on Twitter and Facebook. You can call in 866-472-5788. More Sex Out Loud after the break.
Stimulating talk.
It gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time.
The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
This is Jennifer Pritchett from the Smitten Kitten. We're huge Tristan Taramino fans just like you, and we're so proud to be the presenting sponsor for Sex Out Loud. If you're not already familiar with Smitten Kitten, here's the deal. We're an education-based sex toys and supplies retailer. We sell high-quality, non-toxic, and artist-made sex toys, organic lubes, and all kinds of kinky stuff, including hard-to-find vegan options. We cater to an incredibly diverse clientele and specialize in helping you find new sexual interests, expand your sexual skill sets, and even troubleshoot sexual issues with you. We are here to help you feel confident and sexy. We spend a ton of time and energy curating our selection of products to make sure we have the best selection, be it silicone dildos, pegging and strap-on equipment, vibrators, or ethically made porn. Our mission is to make sex-positive culture accessible to everyone. Don't miss our free streaming explicit educational videos, many of which were directed by Tristan herself, on our website, smittenkittenonline.com. Get inspired by Tristan's amazing show, Sex Out Loud, and then visit us online at our Minneapolis location.
Ready to take your sex life to the next level? Let Tristan Taramino's award-winning expert guide sex education series help. Each DVD is packed with honest information, explicit techniques, scorching sex scenes, authentic chemistry, and real female orgasms. Go to puckerup.com and use coupon code SEXOUTLOUD for 25% off your order.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan@puckerup.com. That's Tristan@puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud. Today we're talking to David Jay, who is the founder of the Asexual Visibility and Education Network at asexuality.org. And before the break, David, you talked about how diverse the asexual community is. So tell me more about this growing community. Who is a part of it?
So we've got almost as much diversity in the ace community. Ace is sort of a slang term for asexual, a little bit like queer, as there is in the sexual community. We've spread all over the world right now. So the asexual forums have been translated into over a dozen languages, and I'm coordinating with co-organizers in Israel and Bogota, Colombia, and Russia, and Japan, and all over the world, all of whom are sort of building their own asexual communities. We've got a full range of age, and within the community, there are some people who identify as romantic and will identify as homoromantic or heteroromantic or biromantic or panromantic. And there's this idea that romantic attraction is different from sexual attraction. And you can have asexual people who still are very strongly romantically attracted to people who form really strong romantic relationships. There's also been a lot of people who talk about it, really talk about how it's a spectrum. So there are people who identify as gray A, who are kind of in the area between gray A, is someone who's on the spectrum between sexual and asexual. So they experience a lower level of sexual attraction than most people, or than society considers normal. And a lot of their experience is around kind of figuring out how to integrate sexuality into their lives and explore it, when a lot of times social expectation and a lot of times their partners kind of expect it to be at a different level. Sexual and asexual. And something that's really interesting, and I don't know why this is and wouldn't want to hypothesize it, is that we've had a lot of people exploring gender non-binary identity in the asexual community. really high percentage of people identify as neither male nor female, which I think is fantastic. We've had this whole coming together of people around gender neutral, who identify as gender neutral or gender neutral or gender queer, who talk about the intersection between that experience and AIDS experience.
Okay, so you broke up a little bit there. I didn't know if that was my connection or that was your connection. When you started to talk about how people may identify as gray, or which is gray. So define that for me, gray A or gray.
Gray A is someone who's on the spectrum between sexual and asexual. So they experience a lower level of sexual attraction than most people, or than society considers normal. And a lot of their experience is around kind of figuring out how to integrate sexuality into their lives and explore it, when a lot of times social expectation and a lot of times their partners kind of expect it to be at a different level.
Okay, so that's slightly different than experiencing no sexual attraction.
Yeah, yeah, it's a spectrum. And what we found is that people are really coming together around talking about how do you interact with kind of this broad social expectation that everyone needs to be sexual to be happy. And that's kind of this common element that a lot of us are butting our heads up against and trying to challenge, both in our own lives and more broadly.
Now, I've got a question from a listener on Facebook. Joelle asks, does this mean that people who live asexually live without masturbation? This is a great question. Do asexuals masturbate?
This is an excellent, excellent question, and we, in fact, have science to answer this question. There was a study that was done in the University of British Columbia, which found that asexual people are as likely to have tried masturbation as sexual people are. It didn't test how frequently asexual people masturbate. But if you think about it, that makes sense. We have, you know, our bodies still operate the same way. We still experience pleasure. We don't experience sexual attraction, but you don't need to really experience sexual attraction to anyone to enjoy masturbating. So it's something that we enjoy doing.
And so for the people who don't experience sexual attraction to other people, can they have a sexual relationship with themselves? And does that not make them asexual?
I would say that I think within the experience of the asexual community, people who masturbate don't really have a different life. People who masturbate but don't experience sexual attraction and don't form sexual relations with other people have pretty much the same life experience as people in the community who don't masturbate. It doesn't really change how other people see you. It doesn't really change how you, you know, do complex things like figure out how to connect with people in the world. And for that reason, it doesn't change how people identify. It's just seen as kind of like, you know, it's like releasing a valve or like cleaning up the plumbing. It's like it's a fun thing that you can do to relieve stress, but it doesn't really have much to do with the rest of your life.
Okay, so let's talk about the valve. And I want to get back to something that you said earlier about this internal drive. You didn't feel like you had this internal sex drive. And I'm often, as a sex educator, trying to get people to let go of this notion that all desire stems from a spontaneous sex drive. Because I think we see these images in our culture and in the media that sexual desire equals I will run across hot coals to have sex with you. I will forego food, shelter, a job, my family to have sex with you. Let the pot boil over on the stove. We need to have sex right now in the kitchen. That's how much I want to have sex with you. That's my description of sort of Hollywood desire.
Yeah.
And I'm always trying to really undo that for people because there are people who don't feel that strong a drive to have sex. For a variety of reasons, some of which are actually physical. I mean, as we get older, our hormones change, our lives change, stress impacts this, illness, all sorts of things. And so I'm wondering how asexuals compare to people simply who I would consider to have a low sex drive.
I mean, that's a complicated question, and the only answers that I have to it are anecdotal.
Mm-hmm.
I think that, I think sex drive is a really complicated, as you said, sex drive is a really complicated thing. My understanding, which is obviously, I'm not the most qualified person, but my understanding of how sex drive works is it's also a little bit like having a good conversation with someone, right? Where if you have good chemistry and you've got interesting things to talk about and you know how to find interesting things to talk about, you can have a really good, interesting conversation. And that goes interesting places and that where you explore cool stuff. And sex is a little bit like that. And so I think that, it is, in that sense, it's a way of exploring something cool with another person. And it's one of many ways of exploring something cool with another person. So for me, I really like being physical with people. When I'm physical with people, when I'm physically affectionate, physically close, it doesn't veer towards sexuality. It kind of goes off and will like cuddle and give one another back rub and then like kind of in other ways engage with our bodies without it necessarily looking traditionally like sex. And that's really fun. And I have a strong drive to do that. But I don't know how that relates to what you might call sex drive.
So you have a strong drive to cuddle or be physical with someone, but you don't have a strong drive to necessarily get naked or give or get pleasure or head towards something like orgasm.
Not to head towards orgasm. I would say that if you define pleasure broadly enough, then it's definitely something that's a part of how I interact with people.
So maybe it's about expanding these definitions.
I mean, obviously
you're doing that, but maybe it is about expanding the spectrum of what even qualifies as a sex drive and as desire.
Yeah, I would agree. And I would say that to me, kind of identifying as an asexual person, it's not that the stuff that usually fits within the bubble of sexuality is bad to me. It's not that I have a problem with it. It's that it's not particularly special or interesting. When I've kind of gone in that direction with people, it just hasn't really made sense to my body. It hasn't felt like a fun thing to do. So I don't keep going in that direction because I'd rather do other things that are fun for me.
And would you say that when you think about sex, what are the feelings that come up for you? I mean, is it like, are you neutral on it, or are there, and what about other people anecdotally? How do they feel about sex? What kind of feelings are attached to sex?
I mean, I think it varies a lot from person to person. I know that sometimes like people have said it looks awkward or it looks like kind of adorable. People have said, and I think it kind of varies for me based on like what I think it's representing in the relationship that it appears in.
I mean, do you find it like awful? Are there any points at which you're like, ugh, sex? No, that's like something I don't want to do, like eating bugs.
I wouldn't say that. It's more like, I might say that. It's more like, if things doesn't, I don't feel an intrinsic understanding of why I would want to go there. Why I would want to do that with my body when there's other things I could be doing with my body that are more fun. Or that I know to be a better way to engage with people. It works for me.
Right. So it doesn't hold any sort of appeal or draw for you.
Yeah.
And do you think a lot of people who are asexual identify as asexual across their lifespan? Or do people come in and out of periods of asexuality?
You know, so this is something we talk about a lot in the community. Most of the asexual people I know are fairly stable. We've been identified this way our entire lives. I know that's true for me. I think that, like, as with any sexual orientation, there's some people who will move in or move out. But it tends to be a kind of gradual process, and it tends to not be something that you can predict. Like, I don't know if many people identify as asexual because, like, they got out of a bad relationship and now they're going to identify as asexual for a while. That tends to be more like celibacy. It's more people who maybe identified as sexual for a while and then over the course of several years suddenly start feeling more asexual or vice versa.
Okay, we're going to take another break to hear from some of our fabulous sponsors. But when we get back, we're going to talk about how asexual people date, have romantic relationships, and what the connection between being asexual and being polyamorous may be. So please stick around. More Sex Out Loud when we return.
The Internet's number one talk station.
Number one talk station.
VoiceAmerica.com.
Ready to take your sex life to the next level? Let Tristan Taramino's award-winning expert guide sex education series help. Each DVD is packed with honest information, explicit techniques, scorching sex scenes, authentic chemistry, and real female orgasms. Go to puckerup.com and use coupon code SEXOUTLOUD for 25% off your order.
Experience love with a little help from nature's soothing ingredients with Astroglide Natural Personal Lubricant. This all-natural and botanical formula lets you get in touch with your wild side, all while keeping it green. Astroglide Natural Personal Lubricant is glycerin, paraben, and alcohol-free, and it's made with aloe vera, vitamins C and E, and chamomile. But with the same second-only-to-nature feel that you get with your regular Astroglide. Visit astroglide.com to get your free sample and start hitting it green between the sheets today.
This is Jennifer Pritchett from The Smitten Kitten. We're huge Tristan Taramino fans, just like you, and we're so proud to be the presenting sponsor for Sex Out Loud. If you're not already familiar with Smitten Kitten, here's the deal. We're an education-based sex toys and supplies retailer. We sell high-quality, non-toxic, and artist-made sex toys, organic lubes, and all kinds of kinky stuff, including hard-to-find vegan options. We cater to an incredibly diverse clientele and specialize in helping you find new sexual interests, expand your sexual skill sets, and even troubleshoot sexual issues with you. We are here to help you feel confident and sexy. We spend a ton of time and energy curating our selection of products to make sure we have the best selection, be it silicone dildos, pegging and strap-on equipment, vibrators, or ethically made porn. Our mission is to make sex-positive culture accessible to everyone. Don't miss our free streaming explicit educational videos, many of which were directed by Tristan herself, on our website, smittenkittenonline.com. Get inspired by Tristan's amazing show, Sex Out Loud, and then visit us online at our Minneapolis location.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan at puckerup.com. That's Tristan at puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud. Today we're talking about asexuality and what it means to be asexual. It means also that my segues into my little quippy things that I say about my sponsors are feeling more and more awkward and strange and even ironic. So I want to just, you just heard from Jennifer Pritchett, who's the owner of the Smitten Kitten in Minneapolis. And I want to thank the Smitten Kitten, which is a really amazing store, and remind everyone that A, you should support them because they support the show and make it possible. And it's the holidays. If you didn't get what you wanted from Santa, then you can get what you want by yourself at smittenkittenonline.com and use the coupon code Tristan for 20% off. Plus, if you want some free lube, you can visit one of my other sponsors, Astroglide. Astroglide personal lubricants make sex better. Visit astroglide.com and get a free sample. Okay, we've gotten that business out of the way. So, back to asexuality. I want to now find out from you. David J. is our guest, and he's one of really the most outspoken and visible members of the asexual community. David, how are people talking about romance and committed relationships and love relationships who identify as asexual and are therefore not necessarily having sexual relationships with people?
So this is a really big topic of discussion in the asexual community, because most asexual people have a really strong desire to form intimate connections with other people. And I think we live in a society where the concept of intimacy and the concept of sexuality are sort of Velcroed together. Even though everyone kind of intrinsically knows that you don't need to be in a sexual relationship for that relationship to be close, a lot of the way that we talk about intimacy kind of assumes that sexuality is caught up in it. And so in the asexual community, there's been this whole kind of big movement of people exploring lots and lots and lots of different ways to form interrelationships that are about sexuality. Kind of like you said, some of those look like romantic relationships. So asexual people will date either asexual people or sexual people, which can work really, really well. And I'll talk about how that works in a little while. I know that I'm right now in a romantic relationship with another asexual person. And there's also people who form really, really close aromantic or non-romantic relationships that look kind of like a more committed best friendship. So I also have a couple of close aromantic relationships. One of them was with a straight guy, and him and I will say that we love one another. We'll regularly have discussions about kind of where our relationship is going in the next 2 years. We make commitments to one another to spend time kind of in the short term and the long term. We do a lot of that stuff, but it feels like really close friendship rather than feeling like a romantic relationship.
And this is where I feel like asexuality really exposes just how limited we are in our language and our conceptions around love and commitment. This really reminds me of an incredible presentation I went to at a conference called Open SF, which is in San Francisco and is produced by Peppermint, who is a polyamorous activist.
Oh, I love Peppermint.
Yeah, so there's this great presentation by Marsha Baczynski and Julianne Carroll. It was called Non-Monogamy Without Sex, Making Sense of Chosen Family, Non-Sexual Partnerships, and Romantic Friendships. And they began to explore these really intense and committed relationships we have that simply aren't friendships. They are at a different level. Both people or more than two people who are involved in them don't consider them to be friendships. They consider them to be something else. However, they are not sexual. And it was a fascinating class. And then we broke up into these smaller groups and everyone in the small group kind of did a little sharing. And people talked about all of these non-traditional relationships, which were incredibly intimate, really significant, really special, very committed, and yet non-sexual, but still using terms like commitment, partnership. And for me, it was really, really eye-opening and radical, because as we all brainstormed these different kinds of relationships that are so critical to our lives but aren't necessarily sexual, there was just nods around the room. I mean, it was resonating with so many different people. And so I can see that there's great overlap between the asexual community and the polyamorous or non-monogamy community. I'm wondering if you see that too.
Yeah, and we've seen that from the very beginning. I mean, going back to the early days of the asexual community, there was this sense that a lot of people knew that we wanted to form into relationships, and we had no idea what that looked like. And we were looking at the world around us, even in kind of most of the queer world, and everywhere that people were really talking about intimate relationships, they were talking about sexuality implicitly or explicitly. And the one place that wasn't true was in the poly community. In the poly community was the first place that I, as an asexual person coming to understand myself, found people really seriously talking about partnerships that didn't have to involve sexuality. And also talking about multiple partnerships, which is also a huge thing in the asexual community, because shockingly, when you take sex out of the picture, monogamy becomes very hard to define. There are asexual people who identify as monogamous. I'm personally not one of them. But even if you identify as monogamous, it kind of turns into less of a predefined cultural playbook for for what commitment means, and more of a really in-depth discussion with your partner about what you want commitment to mean. And so I would say that kind of from the beginning, we've really learned a lot from the poly community about how to describe the kinds of relationships that we want.
And I understand that you yourself have a partner, and it's, you know, it's about to be the new year, and you're going to do something special. Do you want to tell us about that?
Oh, yeah. So we are going to go kind of like scamper off into the middle of the woods somewhere with a big whiteboard and a big fold-up whiteboard that I have, and we're going to map out a lot of the things going on in our lives and talk about our relationship. One of the things that's been really amazing, this is my first romantic relationship with another asexual person. One of the things that's been really amazing about it is the extent to which we kind of regularly hold up the script of romantic relationships and just take a big red pen to it and edit it and really ask ourselves what we want out of relationships. So we're going to do things like we'll both map out our entire community, map out all the relationships that matter to us, and then looking at all those relationships and what they're doing, say, okay, here's where I want my broader community to go, and here's how I think our partnership could help each of us kind of take our communities to the place we want them to be. And we're really constantly, intimacy to us is about defining what we want the relationship to be.
Well, in that way, it sounds very similar to a lot of poly folks I know who are just super engaged in the process of their relationships and of really defining it on their own terms and constantly sort of challenging that script, as you said. But I'm interested to know, in your experience, whether it's personal or with people in the community, can asexual people and sexual people be in relationships with each other that work?
Yes, all the time. So I'm in multiple very intimate relationships with sexual people. And it works much like, you know, two sexual people can be in relationships that are intimate that don't involve sex. That happens all the time, right? What gets a little bit more complicated is when an asexual person and a sexual person are in a primary romantic relationship. And then what happens is there tends to be some kind of negotiation around what kind of physicality will happen, and what kind of physicality, what kind of sexuality will happen. And usually there's kind of a happy medium between that gets found that's about finding the thing that both people want to explore together. As an asexual person, there's usually still a lot of areas of touch that I want to explore. And in the relationships that I've had in the past with sexual people, there were areas of touch that they wanted to explore. And when we could frame things that way rather than framing things as one of us has an intrinsic desire for sex and that's all they ever want, and the other person has an intrinsic desire for not sex and that's all that they ever want. That, you know, talking about it in terms of exploration allowed us to communicate much more, much better, and kind of find a cool way to engage with one another.
But a lot of this is entirely uncharted territory because, for example, what you just said, I mean, I feel like sexual incompatibility is one of the number one problems that couples have, that primary couples have and primary partnerships have. It's what keeps couples therapists in business. And part of why it's such an issue is because the expectation is that if we are really in love and we're soulmates and we're meant to be together, then we're going to be sexually compatible, you know, on 99% of the places, which of course is totally false and it's unattainable and it's just not true and not possible. And so I feel like the dialogue around sexual incompatibility is, this one wants to have more sex. This one wants to have less sex. This one wants to have a different kind of sex. But I don't know that it goes beyond those pretty vague, broad brushstrokes. You know what I mean? I feel like it's the source of these major conflicts for people, and yet we don't dig around in them and really break down what that could look like. I feel like if we did, there would be like less people breaking up and getting divorces. I'm being totally honest here.
Yeah, and I don't know. I mean, I don't have nearly the experience with these issues that a sex therapist would, right? I'm an educator and activist in this community. But I would say that in my experience and the experience of the people I've been talking to, the framing that you described isn't a helpful way to go about it. And I think that there's also some selection that happens when you talk about romantic relationships between sexual and asexual people, where both people kind of go into the relationship already aware that sexual compatibility isn't going to be the measure of whether or not the relationship is successful, and already aware that that's going to be a tricky issue to explore, possibly tricky in a fun way, but tricky. I think that perspective going into it can make a huge difference.
But I still think what's working against that couple is this importance that we put on sex and sexuality as really as a barometer for a romantic relationship, as one of the key things that distinguishes a committed relationship from a non-committed one. You know, I feel like it's this importance that we put on sex. And that's what I want to talk about when we come back from our next break. And of course, I don't have a cute lead-in, so I'm just going to say super thanks to my other sponsor, WeVibe. WeVibe is the world's best-selling couples vibrator. Go to we-vibe.com to find out all about it. More with David J. talking about asexuality. More Sex Out Loud when we return.
Streaming live, the leader in Internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
This is Jennifer Pritchett from The Smitten Kitten. We're huge Tristan Taramino fans just like you, and we're so proud to be the presenting sponsor for Sex Out Loud. If you're not already familiar with Smitten Kitten, here's the deal. We're an education-based sex toys and supplies retailer. We sell high-quality, non-toxic, and artist-made sex toys, organic lubes, and all kinds of kinky stuff, including hard-to-find vegan options. We cater to an incredibly diverse clientele and specialize in helping you find new sexual interests, expand your sexual skill sets, and even troubleshoot sexual issues with you. We are here to help you feel confident and sexy. We spend a ton of time and energy curating our selection of products to make sure we have the best selection, be it silicone dildos, pegging and strap-on equipment, vibrators, or ethically made porn. Our mission is to make sex-positive culture accessible to everyone. Don't miss our free streaming explicit educational videos, many of which were directed by Tristan herself, on our website, smittenkittenonline.com. Get inspired by Tristan's amazing show, Sex Out Loud, and then visit us online at our Minneapolis location.
Turn off the TV and pick up the remote control that is sure to please. Worn while making love, the WeVibe 3 features whisper quiet motors that will keep you anything but quiet. We can't help it if the rechargeable battery lasts longer than you do. Learn more about the world's number one vibrator for couples at WeVibe.com. WeVibe. Share the pleasure.
Ready to take your sex life to the next level? Let Tristan Taramino's award-winning expert guide sex education series help. Each DVD is packed with honest information, explicit techniques, scorching sex scenes, authentic chemistry, and real female orgasms. Go to puckerup.com and use coupon code SEXOUTLOUD for 25% off your order.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan at puckerup.com. That's Tristan at puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud. We are having a provocative and thoughtful conversation with David J., the founder of the Asexuality Visibility and Education Network. We have been talking about asexuality and hopefully, I hope, educating people about it. And what strikes me most, David, and what I feel a little bit lost about is that I'm a member of the sex positive movement. I'm a sex educator and I'm constantly around other sex educators. And I would say that many sex educators, in fact, most put forth a similar refrain in their work. And that refrain goes something like, sex is our most powerful life force. Sexual empowerment leads to general empowerment. If you have a satisfying sex life, you will be more fulfilled in all areas, other areas of your life. These are basic messages of sex positive activists and educators. And I've been in a room with really you know, high level, highly regarded people who've said, you know, when I get fucked well, the rest of my life falls into place. And when I don't, it all falls apart. And in that equation, I feel like we're doing a disservice to asexuals. We're excluding them, we're shaming them, we're making them feel shitty about themselves, and we're certainly not being allies. And so what I need to know from you is how, as a sex positive educator who's primarily talking about sex for the most part, how do I also be an ally to asexuals?
I think it's about taking all the statements you just made, and which I completely agree with all of them, and putting them in context. I, as an asexual activist, think that sex is crazy important, right? I think that it is a huge vector of happiness in many, many people's lives, and the more, you know, amazing education and lube and sex toys and everything that they can get to explore that part of their lives that makes them happy, the better. I think that what doesn't do anyone, including the sex positive movement, a service, is if people feel like they need to be sexual because that's the only way to be happy. So I think the important thing that I try to do is talk about sex as this great, amazing way that people connect with one another and with themselves in the context of talking about intimacy as, or intimacy, that's kind of a loaded word that I define, talking about human connection, connecting with oneself and others as a bigger project that everyone's involved in, right? There's lots and lots and lots of ways for me to connect with myself. Multiple ways for all of us to connect with ourselves. Sexuality is one of those ways. There's lots and lots and lots of ways for all of us to connect with others. Sexuality is one of those ways. And I think sexuality is a way that everyone needs to explore on some level, right? I, as an asexual person, spent a lot of time exploring sort of the cultural landscape of sexuality to come to the conclusion that it wasn't the thing that I wanted. And that exploration was something that taught me a lot about myself and taught me a lot about how I can connect with other people. And I think that I wouldn't want to shy away from that exploration the same way I wouldn't want a sexual person to shy away from exploring all the kinds of sexuality they like. So I think if we are giving people the tools to explore sexuality on their own terms and find ways to connect with people on their own terms, then we're doing things well.
And I think we have to include, I think when we speak to an audience, we also have to include people who are not sexual and who may not be sexual right now or ever, and somehow they have to be part of the discussion. I mean, I feel like otherwise we're setting too much of a prescriptive kind of script, saying the only way for you to sort of free yourself from all this stuff and live your most, you know, authentic life is for you to have this crazy, amazing sex life. And because I think if that's the only message, it leaves too many people out of the discussion.
Yeah. I think that having some way that we can tell stories about people figuring out how much sex is a part of how they want to connect people and themselves, period, is an important part of telling stories about how exploring sexuality can be a part of exploring your amazing authentic self. Because I think that that's really, really true. You just have to acknowledge it's not the only way.
And I think we also have to, I mean, one of the things that I talked to my partner about this before I went on the air, and he said, you know, I have a question. If you're not inundated with questions, I have a question for David. And I said, okay, what is it? And he said, what can asexual people teach the rest of us about love?
I would say that I don't know what we can teach. I think that the part of love that we're exploring is how do we unvelcro these concepts of sexuality and human connection? How do we talk about intimacy and relationships outside of sexuality? Because I think if we know how to talk about the emotional connection stuff that's going on, without dragging sexuality along with it in our language, then I think it'll allow us to talk about sex a lot more freely and accurately, and allow us to talk about intimacy a lot more freely and accurately. And I think that that's a really beneficial thing for everyone.
and really broaden these terms, get away from this notion, which I've talked about on the show before, which is if you're not having sex, you're just roommates. that kind of,
exactly.
You know, that kind of stereotype, where we can talk about partnerships and romantic partnerships and romantic relationships and committed relationships, and not necessarily assume that they are always have been sexual, are sexual, will be sexual, but to try to separate some of this out and not create these hierarchies around what constitutes the right way to have a committed relationship.
Yeah, very well said.
David, we are out of time, unfortunately, and there's
so
much more to get to. So here's what I want people to know, and that is that you and a big crew of asexual activists are going to Creating Change this year, and mm-hmm. people can help get you there through supporting your travel fund. You're doing a fundraiser on Indiegogo. So if they go to indiegogo.com/makeatlantaasexy, because the conference is in Atlanta, they can support you that way. And also that everyone should really see this film, which is called Asexual, which features you prominently. It's produced by Angela Tucker. It debuted at Frameline Film Festival. And like I said at the top of the hour, it's available on Netflix Instant, which is like the film on demand. So you can go and watch it and support the film that way. But I really want to thank you so much for being on Sex Out Loud, David, and opening up my eyes to this new world, and really, I hope, giving people out there a lot to think about in terms of their own definitions of sex, of love, of commitment, and of partnership.
Well, thank you so much. It's really a pleasure to get to talk with you.
David Jay is the founder of AVEN, the Asexual Visibility and Education Network. You can find out more at asexuality.org. You can follow David on Twitter at DavidGLJAY. All of these links and more can be found at sexoutloudradio.com. Click on the link for episode resources. I want to thank everyone who makes this show possible, including executive producer Karen Dana, associate producer Raymond Johnson, segment producer and editor Colton, my announcer Cooper Beckett from Life on the Swing Set, Matt, my engineer, and everyone at Voice America. If you missed any part of this show or want to hear it again, you can listen to it on demand or download the MP3 by going to voiceamerica.com and searching for Sex Out Loud. You can also subscribe to it as a podcast on iTunes. Tune in next Friday at 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern, when my guest will be legendary adult film performer and sexual rights activist Nina Hartley. We will talk about her 28-year career in porn, her brand new Fleshlight, and her work with the Woodhull Foundation. Until then, I encourage you to keep the discussion going on facebook.com/AskTristan, on Twitter at SexOutLoudRadio, and in your own life. Take some time to talk about sex out loud.
That's a wrap on today's show. Go to voiceamerica.com to listen to this and other episodes on demand or as podcasts. And make sure you come back next Friday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 Pacific, for Sex Out Loud with Tristan Taramino on Voice America Variety. Sex Out Loud is brought to you by The Smitten Kitten, non-toxic quality sex toys and supplies. Visit smittenkittenonline.com.